This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 198. Today, CJ and I are going to catch up on the latest news from Microsoft, recorded live June the 1st, 2017. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. Good afternoon, CJ.
It is.
We started this one a little bit in the, I guess for me, it's afternoon. For you, we're almost afternoon. Are you noon yet?
Nope. I am in mountain time right now, I think. Yeah.
So you're what, like 11 a.m.?
Coming up 11, yeah.
Coming up 11,
so
okay.
I'm out of my usual time zone.
There you go. You're just off by an hour. That's okay. We're always off by one. We're developers. We're good with that.
So true.
Man, it feels like I haven't talked to you in forever with doing like, it's been at least a solid week since I was out of town last week. You're out of town this week. You did a show kind of hosted solo, and
yep,
a lot of stuff has happened since you and I've kind of sat down to chat up a bit, man. So what's new with you?
I am currently at SharePoint Fest conference in Denver, Colorado, which is a conference all about Office 365 and SharePoint. We're exhibiting here, Hyperfisher here as an exhibitor and sponsor. And I did a session yesterday on Azure Functions with Microsoft Graph. So building serverless Azure Functions with Microsoft Graph integration for doing, you know, pulling and pushing information out of Office 365 and stuff. It was really cool. It's good.
Very cool. Yeah. I spent last week, I was at the Techorama conference in Antwerp, Belgium. It's my first trip to Belgium. It was really cool. The guys there for the Techorama conference, they do, you know, when you go to an event and you just kind of, you're kind of taken back a bit with, these guys really do a good job of just the execution of the way it was set up. It's really cool. It was actually, the whole place was hosted in a movie theater, or a Cineplex, I should say. And then each of the different session rooms were in movie theater rooms or theater rooms. So you had super comfortable chairs. I will admit that I did find one session that had absolutely nothing to do with me. And I sat up in the back towards the corner and totally dozed off for about an hour. I was trying to find a nice quiet spot, and it worked perfectly. Super comfortable chairs. It was good. It was really good. But I guess a couple things that I wanted to kind of touch on before we dived into it. And then I know you want to get some stuff that, you know, a bunch of news that we want to run through today.
Sure, yeah.
But we recently, you know, you and I have been listening to the submissions that people had for our episode 200 contest. I am absolutely thrilled the ones that we got. They definitely have some that are candidates for walking away with an Xbox or a new Surface laptop. But I'm not going to do any kind of teasers on which one my favorite is. I thought that you and I would listen to them in our own little silos and then get back together and kind of go on, you know, we like this one and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, I've listened to a few that have come in, but I certainly haven't got through all of them. But thanks to everybody that submitted one. It's fair to say we got quite a few submissions and we're happy with the response. And we look forward to listening to them all.
Absolutely, yeah. And the other thing, too, that I wanted to mention is that, so I started running a little series on my company blog, on the Voitanos blog, that I'm also pimping through my blog and Twitters and Facebooks and all the socials and all that stuff. But it's called the SharePoint Framework in Your Own Words. And interviewing, I think I mentioned this before on the podcast, where I interviewed a bunch of SharePoint developers with a lot of experience and background doing SharePoint. By the time this episode comes out, I will be what I thought was going to be my last week of it, but I actually grabbed a couple more people, so we're going to run it for another week or two after this. But it's been really cool to see people's opinions on the SharePoint framework, to answer these different questions. A lot of them all answer the questions not knowing what each other had said. And it's really interesting to see the similarities and then the unique responses. One thing that I think is kind of funny, though, is like no one's asked me like what I thought about it. So I feel like I want to take the camera and put it in my face and record my own like 2 cents on it.
Yeah, sure. Maybe you should do that.
Yeah. But the other two I want to call out, though, is there are two other podcasts I definitely want to call out. First, this is not a hat tip to you guys or to you as friends or anything, but I'll tell you, Jeremy Thake's been doing a freaking awesome job with the Hyperfish podcast that you guys did. And I specifically want to call out two episodes. One of them, the interview he did with Mark Anderson back at, towards the end of April. And it talks about the whole citizen developer thing and all that. I absolutely love the way Mark addresses this problem space, the way he addresses the conversation that happens. I found it really, really good, really timely that I was in a couple of conversations recently and was pointing people to say, you got to go listen to Mark's interview. The other one too that Jeremy did with the, I always f*** up his last name, but Chris Flissinger from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Close enough.
He owns the stuff for around, I think he owns Office 365 groups with from the engineering side. And he did a really good job explaining it. But I got to say, I am still, after sitting through that panel that I did back in Austin, Texas in early April, and then hearing explanations for it and people trying to simplify it, friends over at the Microsoft Cloud IT podcast, Ben Sedgink and Scott Hogue, they went through it as well. Man, I tell you, this group thing is just confusing it. To me, I don't get. I even sat down to go try and create a group the other day, and it was just like, where am I supposed to do this? I want to create a group, and the external sharing, it still doesn't seem to work. There's a conference I'm doing in like 2 or 3 weeks over in Amsterdam, and everything's being done with a group, and they're like, they send me the invites, and I can't get in. They send me another one, and I can't get in. I said, well, can I use your other email address? I'm like, all right, well, here's a different email address. I go, cool, we're going to do all the communication to this other email address. And I'm like, well, I don't check that email address. Why'd you give it to me? I was like, because the first one didn't work. So it's like, God, this is so frustrating.
That's super annoying. Yeah, they got a long way to go on that. But yeah, Jeremy's been doing some great interviews. He's got one he did recently with Jeff Teeper, was kind of interesting as well. And then one he's got coming up will be pretty interesting. That's with one of the guys from Yammer, I think, Yammer Engineering, and apparently he was asking him some tough questions. So that will be pretty fun to listen to, I suspect.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Yeah, I'm still catching up. I was way behind on a bunch of them. The other one that I've been listening to a lot, trying to catch up on, is Richard DeZerga and Andrew Coates doing the Office 365 Developer Podcast. That's been a really, really good show. I love some of the interviews they've done, like with the Script.js guys, the Office add-in, easy way to go through and to debug Office add-ins and try Office add-ins.
Gotcha. That's really good. Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, so hey, you and I, we got a bunch of news to go through here. We got some Azure news. We got some Office 365 news, a couple picks at the end.
Yep.
I think the big one, though, that I think that you and I wanted to just chat a little bit here is that there was a big announcement about a week or so, within a few days of the SharePoint Virtual Summit, about a new SharePoint conference that was kind of branded out of the box, or at least it felt, at least everyone thought that it was the SharePoint conference that Microsoft has done in the past, coming back to Las Vegas, or at least that's how it was initially branded.
Sadly not.
Yeah, and then there was a bunch of scrambling. It seemed like there was a bunch of, holy shit, everything's on fire, yo, we got to clean something up. And it's a third-party conference that Microsoft is sponsoring, endorsing, giving the thumbs up to. I don't know how you want to call it, what you want to say. Yeah. But basically, this is the North American version of the European SharePoint conference. So you'll find out more information about this at SharePointNA.com.
Yeah.
What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it was a shame that the way it launched meant there was some confusion about whether this was an SPC coming back put on by Microsoft. But it's heavily backed by Microsoft, this conference. So I think it will actually turn out to be a good show. And with decent attendance, probably up around 5,000 people or so, I suspect. I understand it's going to get some decent, attract some decent sponsors and exhibitors and things. So I think it's got a great shot at being a good conference. And with Microsoft showing up in force, they'll have a lot of speakers there and a lot of content direct from them as well as part of that backing, as well as throwing their marketing weight behind it. I think it could turn out to be a great show. I am a bit disappointed that I don't think it's a real SharePoint conference, because it's not put on by Microsoft and it's put on by a third party, and there's things that go along with that that mean that I don't think it'll be quite like an SPC of yesteryear. But, I guess we'll see how it turns out.
I suspect they're kind of being a little quiet about it, as far as at least Microsoft is, because Ignite is just a few months away, and they got to be careful about making sure that people don't think that all the SharePoint news is all of a sudden not going to be at Ignite. Now, I don't know if it is or isn't. I don't mean to imply that that's the case, but I think that it's one of those things like going, hey, we don't need to be talking about this or really pushing an event other than Ignite right now. So,
no, absolutely. There was a big jihad on product conferences at Microsoft for the last few years, and the central marketing group at Microsoft has gone to great lengths to ensure that there aren't splintered product conferences like they were with Project Conference, Exchange Conference, Link Conference, SharePoint Conference, all just in the office space. Those were the conferences. And so I think Microsoft are keeping this at arm's length, especially till Ignite, right, which is their premier tier one conference. Mm-hmm. But obviously they want it to succeed, so they're going to help them at some point.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. My fear is that they're not getting out in front of this soon enough, and they're letting everyone kind of make up their own definition of what's going on. But
yeah,
I mean, it's not...
Registration opens in, apparently, according to the site, 10 days, 11 hours, 55 minutes, and 15 seconds.
So. Yeah, well, they also posted a thing about a call for speakers, and there is no real call for speakers, so I found that to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, it's hard to register for a conference when you're not quite sure what the content's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a little tricky.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting, though. I mean, if you're interested in this conference, go head over to SharePointNA.com.
Yeah.
I can tell you that the positioning for this show is all going to be like starting at current day SharePoint and looking forward. So think SharePoint Online, looking forward. Think SharePoint 2016 on-prem. Maybe Feature Pack 1, maybe Feature Pack 2. But definitely SharePoint 2016 going forward, SharePoint Online going forward, and the current tools that would be recommended for use going forward. So you're not going to see like InfoPath or SharePoint Designer or migrating from a WSP to an add-in or to a SharePoint framework stuff or anything like that.
Sorry about the noise in the background. I'm sitting in the middle of the conference, so apologies about that.
It's all good, man. We've done that before where all of a sudden people start breaking stuff down around you and all that kind of junk.
Yeah, it just so happens that this wonderful, nice lady is rolling past with an entire trolley load full of crockery right now.
What is crockery?
Oh, like plates?
Oh, okay. Okay, got it.
A lot of plates. What do you think?
A little translation there.
Yeah, sure. Nice. Should we get on to some news?
Yeah, news time. Hey, before we do the news, why don't we take a quick break for one of our sponsor spots real quick. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on valid.nl. All right, Mr. Johnson, I'm going to let you kick off with some of our news at the start. So what would you like to share with our listeners first?
Everybody loves lower prices, and Azure are reducing them on some general purpose virtual machines, especially in the DV2 category prior to the new DV3 virtual machine launch. So anywhere from roughly 7% reduction down to about 3.5-4% on the Windows side, 5% on the Windows side, depends on which region you're in. So anywhere between sort of 4-7% reduction in those virtual machines, which is kind of nice. So yeah, not really in the price wars category, but definitely passing the savings on to customers as they're able to run them more efficiently.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I've got one here around the, I guess you can call it in the Azure space a bit here. It's a little bit of artificial intelligence stuff from the Cortana Intelligence and Machine Learning blog. It's called Deployment of Pre-trained Models on Azure Container Service. The challenge I think that they have here is that with a lot of the stuff that we're doing these days, as a quite a complicated underpinning of things you have to do for like setup to get everything configured to be able to play with it on your own environment. And they primarily stem from the differences between the underlying software environments and infrastructure. And they can cost businesses a lot of time and money in keeping data scientists and engineers from working towards narrowing down, you know, different incompatibilities and all that kind of stuff. So what Azure has done is that leveraging ACS, they've created a bunch of Docker images to make your life a lot easier to set this stuff up. So they have a Docker image and a little tutorial that they've published here that contains a sample web application and a web server that uses the cognitive toolkit from Azure, from Microsoft, as the deep learning framework that's been pre-trained with a specific model. It's a simple image classification service which submits an image and the application returns the image class it belongs to. So it's an end-to-end tutorial that splits basically up into four different sections that people can go take a look at to get a nice little taste of what this stuff looks like.
That sounds like a nice, easy way to get started.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's cool. So I got a link to the blog post on how this works, showing a picture of a plane and a sports car and a boat, alligator, bunch of different stuff.
Very cool. Azure have just announced custom domain support with SSL, so for the Azure CDN. So previously, when you used Azure CDN, you had to use their, you couldn't have a vanity domain on the endpoint. It was something.azureedge.net. And so now they're adding vanity support, so you can do your own custom domain, and adding HTTPS over the top, right, for SSL, so you can make sure everything's all nicely secure. You obviously pay for egress traffic from the CDN out to your customers, but it's all done through the portal, simple deployment, certificate management, all on the portal, all that sort of stuff. So it looks pretty slick.
Very cool. Another thing here from Azure is around the privileged identity management approval workflow that comes from Azure AD. So this is another post by Alex Simmons on the Enterprise Mobility and Security blog on TechNet. What this does, this new service that they turned on a public preview, is some major updates to the Azure AD Privileged Identity Management Service, is a new and improved user experience, a new approval workflow for improved security, and an audit history for everyone and temporary role assignments. So what this is going to give you the ability to do is to make it easier to see the audit history and approval workflows that are available now for current Azure AD P2 customers, both paid and trial customers. And it's going to, there's a bunch of information on the blog that we'll post here, on the link that we'll put in the show notes, that people can dive in and take a look at some of these new features that they've added.
Nice. Hey, do you know of a product called Microsoft Forms?
I'm aware of it, yes. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I don't think many people are, honestly. There's a product called Microsoft Forms. It's kind of part of Office 365. It's mostly targeted at education customers for running in-class quizzes or surveys and things like that. But they've made some improvements. So there's a new Forms portal that they've rolled out where you can go create new forms and send them out and that sort of thing. And also support for things like right-to-left languages as well, which is super easy. It kind of surprises me they haven't made this more broadly available to business. As far as I understand, it's still closed to education customers from what I remember. But it's actually turning out to be a pretty sweet forms product for creating basic web forms, much like you would with a Google form or what have you, you know, to collect information and things like that. So it's definitely improving. But yeah, it's kind of surprising that they haven't gone a bit more broad with this beyond education at this point.
Another thing that I've got here is an announcement from the Azure side again, and it's around container-based stuff. So what Microsoft did is an article here on TechCrunch, and we'll have a link to the actual GitHub link to the tool as well, but they announced a new tool called Draft. I was going to call it Daft. That's my bad. It's called
Draft. Daft tool.
Yeah, it's the Daft tool. So this is the launch of Draft, which is an open source tool that helps developers streamline the process of developing container-based applications that are designed to run, or at least meant to run, in a Kubernetes cluster. The main idea is to allow developers to work on their applications without knowing anything about Docker and Kubernetes. And actually, you don't even have to have these two things installed on your machine to get started. So this is part of their acquisition. This tool came out as part of their acquisition of Deis, D-E-I-S, which is a container platform from another company. Deis set out to make using containers easier to use for developers and launched a number of open source tools. And this is one of those tools that was built, or at least is built from that acquisition. It's part of a tool that Microsoft was involved in, plus that Deis was already working on. So I have a link to this and to the GitHub repo for this as well in our show notes.
Gotcha. The Azure AD team have been busy. They've got a blog post out saying Azure AD privileged identity management approval workflows are now in public preview. So this lets you do a couple of things. A few things that they list off here: discover and manage privileged role assignments in your directory at scale, so being able to find these things more easily. Reduce risk in permanent assignments by allowing users to activate their roles just in time. So I guess this is kind of like giving somebody temporary privileges to go and do a particular thing and then taking them away when they're all done. Easily review role assignments for compliance, internal audit, or general lifecycle management. So you know how an AD on-prem, people in the company would leave and their accounts would stick around, or kind of get these orphaned accounts with the passwords that were still valid and the account was still activated? These features seem to sort of roll up to being able to keep your Azure Active Directory kind of in a more hygienic state with regards to those kinds of things. So making sure you don't have old accounts and checking out the different who's got what roles and all that sort of stuff. Another one here they say is detect potential risks and fix them with a click of a button via pre-configured alerts and activity logs. So I guess you could set up alerts for weird things going on in your AD and be notified when it happens. And provide contractors and vendors the ability to self-activate administrative privileges at any time. Not sure what that one's all about. But yeah, I'm not sure why you would want to do that. But anyway.
There you go. You can do it.
Maybe somebody wants to. Yeah.
Somebody's been waiting a long time for that one.
Yeah. Actually, one thing that we don't have down here in the show notes, but we should add in the Azure Active Directory spaces, they've just announced a new integration with Workday, which is an HRIS system, so that you can create an account in Workday during employee onboarding. This is typically how it goes, right? You create the account in Workday. They've got now got a new connector, which will reach into Azure AD and provision the account. Or if you're a hybrid customer, it will reach back all the way back through your to your on-prem AD, provision the account, which will then sync up using Azure AD Connect into Active Directory and so forth. So they've added some new Workday connectivity for customers that use Azure Active Directory and Workday.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go too much farther here, let me just take a quick little break here from it and have another one of our sponsors have a word in edgewise to help us support the show.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back, and it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, work flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
Okay, CJ, I've got another bit of news here. This is going back to the container topic with Azure. There was a blog post on the Azure blog just recently called Kubernetes in Action, How Orchestration and Containers Can Increase Resiliency and Uptime.
Oh, yeah.
This is by Brendan Burns, who's a principal architect with the ACS, but he's also the main guy who originally started and is behind Kubernetes. It's been, as he says in the blog post, and as I mentioned a little bit ago, it's been about a month since they finalized the acquisition of Deis to expand the Azure Container Service and Kubernetes support in Azure. What they've done is they've been able to spend a lot more time in working with a product called Helm, which is really good for managing Kubernetes and working with Kubernetes, and see how they can build tighter integration between Helm and Kubernetes on ACS. So what this is, I mean, it's a very short blog post, but what's really interesting about it is what I think is the value in it is an interview that Brendan does with, I believe it's Jeremy Lightness, who's the guy that runs the Microsoft Mechanics video podcast or video blog. And so he shows how that can be done, how you can leverage that. Basically, you know, he says that, you know, orchestrators like Kubernetes provide native support for application management best practices like automatic health checking, based restarts, and monitoring. In addition to those features, Kubernetes also supplies features for doing automatic rollout and rollback of a service. And so this is going to touch on a little bit of that stuff that you can that we can take advantage of in the video. So it's a cool little way to see, like, you know, how you can take advantage of Kubernetes using Helm on top of ACS and see the power behind it. It's an interesting topic. I was with some people last week. We were stuck in a taxi for about 30 minutes because the traffic in Antwerp was terrible. And the concept of containers and why would you use containers over app service or Azure Functions and what's Kubernetes and why is it interesting? We just got off on this whole topic and it was myself and another guy in the car that knew about more versed in containers and Kubernetes and how it all works. And there's two guys that were not as versed in it. And so it was really interesting kind of having that conversation and explaining how everything worked. And it's funny how when the people who don't see it the first time they hear about it, like, that sounds like freaking magic. It's like, yeah. Once you kind of get into it, it's pretty cool.
Wow, that's awesome. Another bit of news here. The Cognitive Toolkit that you talked about earlier has hit GA. So it was announced in beta back in October. And then just today, right before we started recording, actually, a blog post went out by the Cognitive Toolkit team, which our good friend Sonia Koptev works on, or works with, announced that they've gone to GA, so generally available. You can go follow them. They've got a new Twitter account. It's at MSCNTK. And obviously, they're all on Stack Overflow and GitHub for issues and all that sort of stuff. But one of the cool things in this blog post is they did some perf or an independent organization, I guess, did some perf testing on the different toolkits for doing, you know, machine learning and things like that. And Cognitive Toolkit came out pretty well. They went up against things like TensorFlow across a bunch of different tests on a single GPU box and saw a bunch of great perf over things like TensorFlow, which I thought was really interesting. From Deep Learning Bench, or the URL is super long, to the source for this. I won't read it out. There's a whole bunch of hieroglyphs in here. But anyway, we'll link to the blog post and you can dig into the perf results if you want more details. But it looks pretty sweet.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah, I get to spend a little bit of time. I watched a couple of sessions last week on the vision stuff that Mike, the artificial intelligence machines excavate. Man, one was really cool. We watched during the video where the video from the day one build keynote was uploaded to their preview service. It's a video preview one. I forget the name of it. They uploaded it in. It was the service was smart enough to find different people to take different, you know, pictures of the different mugshots, go out and use those pictures to go find, use, I'm assuming Bing, to go find who these people were. Found people like Scott Guthrie and Yin Arenas, and I think Andrea Carl was in there and a couple others, Cornelia from the machine learning team, Satya, and pulled them out, found their pictures, showed links to their bios next to the video to where you can see some information about them. Also found them where they were showing up inside the keynote so you could jump the different spots of it. And then you could see when Scott Guthrie was talking, it identified certain keywords like Microsoft Graph and cross-referenced that. So when I clicked on the tag for Microsoft Graph, it jumped me straight to the section where Yin Arenas was talking about the Microsoft Graph. So
that's cool.
I mean, it's like taking the normal kind of cross-reference search and stuff that we can see with text and applying it to video. It's very slick what they can do with that.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to mention here around Office 365, actually I have two other bits of link here, news that popped out on Office 365. One of them, it's great news. It's just kind of disappointing it's taken this long to come out. What they announced is a general availability of an Office 365 centralized deployment service. This came out yesterday on the last day of May. And from the Office 365 admin center, or if you want to use PowerShell scripts, administrators can now deploy Office web add-ins to individual users, groups, or organizations with ease using centralized deployment. Users are going to simply open up the Office application like Word or Excel, PowerPoint, or Outlook to see the add-ins that are automatically installed in their ribbon. So it allows organizations of any size to easily extend Office with high value across all platforms and to push these changes out without having to tell the users, hey, go install this add-in. Now I can force that upon all of my users, which is pretty slick.
Very cool.
Yeah. My last bit of Office 365 news that I have for you as well is the announcement of a public preview for the Office 365 adoption content pack for Power BI. So it's going to combine the intelligence with usage reports with the interactive analysis capabilities of Power BI to give administrators and people who are doing a rollout rich usage and adoption insights so that they can drive more targeted user training and communication that helps them transform how their organizations communicate and collaborate, enabling a truly modern workspace. And there's a blog post associated with this that's fairly long with a lot of pretty Power BI screenshots that I can never seem to make my Power BI workbooks look like. But somebody else is able to do it, so they look pretty cool. And there's also a video on the Microsoft Mechanics site that is embedded in the blog post that we'll have a link to that you can see this stuff in action.
Very cool. Yeah, I have no idea how to make Power BI look good. So
I can barely make Power BI.
Or work.
I was going to say, that's good because that's where I am. I'd love to get somebody to help us like build something for the podcast, right? Help us analyze the stats to where, I know this is novel, to where I can see it and you can see it.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's an open invitation to anybody who wants to get a little bit of press. And if you do it, we'll have you on the show and have you talk about it.
That'd be sweet.
Anyway. Hey, that's all of the news that I have here. I do have one or two bits of news here, or picks, that I'm going to want to share. Do you by chance have any picks?
I do. I've got two picks.
Oh, awesome. All right, I'm going to let you go first. But before we do that, let's have another word from one of our sponsors. Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Service and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD tool that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. Okay, CJ, you go first with your pick, or one of them.
Okay, first one is Kiwis are officially in space. Not the fruit or the birds, but people from the country, not the people in space. Anyway, there's a company called Rocket Lab, which is, it's headquartered in the US now, but it was originally a Kiwi company, and they launched a rocket into space from New Zealand. It was intended, it's about a meter and a half in diameter, I guess. So it's maybe 5 feet wide, something like that, and about 17 meters tall. I can't remember how many feet that is. But anyway, they launched for the first time. The target was orbit, which was a pretty lofty goal. They didn't make their intended orbit, but they did make launch.
Without a boom.
Yeah, and they did make space, and they did stage their second stage. So, and payload fairing was separated and all that sort of stuff. So although they didn't make their intended target orbit, it was pretty good for the first attempt. And so they launched them from down in New Zealand. Anyway, they've put up a launch day video, but the whole launch, the hashtag for launch was hashtag it's a test. And I guess that was just to make sure everybody knew that it was just a test and the chances of it actually working were pretty low. So they've got a really cool video, their launch day video. It shows a bit about the rocket and stuff like that. But anyway, as born in New Zealand, kind of a nice, proud moment seeing some Kiwis doing interesting things, getting into space from down there.
So I posted this picture to your wall and when I saw this, and so it was so funny. Is it really that hard though to get the space from New Zealand? Because I mean, you guys are upside down. So don't you just like cut the cord and the spaceship like falls into orbit?
Yeah, we just fall off. Yeah, exactly.
There's actually a really good, just talking about Kiwis and everything, there's a really funny exchange between you and me and the MVP program off of a mistaken identity. We have to find that tweet. I'll make sure I'm taking a note myself to make sure we put that in the show notes. But this thing is going back and forth. Did you see the animated GIF that they posted this morning?
Yeah, okay. The spinning kiwi fruit.
This is a funny little thread going back and forth between us.
Yeah, it was pretty good. They tweeted about one of our shows, and I think that's how it started, right? Something like that. Yeah. But they tagged the wrong Chris Johnson, and then we ended up in a funny tweet storm about it. It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
Anyway, so yes, Kiwis are in space.
Okay, so I'm going to keep up with our space theme. And I guess today we're recording at least, SpaceX is doing another launch, another ISS resupply mission. But this is the first time they're reusing the capsule that they're using for the resupply mission. So we've now done a booster that has gone up and they've reused that one now once with more planned in the future. And I guess, sadly, the news is kind of looking like the Falcon Heavy is not going to do a test flight until October, which is after Ignite when you're down here in Florida, which is going to be a little disappointing.
I may have to come down regardless.
Oh, come on back. Come on back. The two boosters on the side are sorry, I was going to say they're used. They're flight-proven boosters, and then the one in the middle is a brand new one. But tonight, they're going to be launching and with ISS. They're going to be launching two ISS with a brand new booster, but the brand new booster is going to have one of the first Dragon capsules that has been refurbished for reuse, and the first time that's ever been done. So that's really cool.
Wow. That is really cool.
Yeah, totally pushing the place forward. But that's not the space link I wanted to talk about. The space link I want to talk about today is what went on sale today was the Lego Ideas Saturn V set that you picked the other day. And I tried like crazy last night for over an hour to get my order in when it went on sale at midnight on June the 1st. And I was up for close to an hour. I was very tired and finally gave up when I could not get it. I would get it into my shopping cart and then I go to check out and all of a sudden I'd get an error and my shopping cart would be empty. So
gotcha.
Another podcaster, somebody we've had on the show named Ben Stedjink was online at the same time. We made a little pact, said, I'm trying to buy two. He was trying to buy two. I said, let's both try and buy four. And the first one to get it, let the other one know and I'll give you the other two. So Ben was able to do it first. So we've got...
You have liftoff?
I have four. I hope so. We'll wait for the shipping notification. We have four Saturn V rockets are inbound to Florida at the moment.
Wow, that's super cool. I was lazy and got on their website this morning when I woke up and saw that it was live. And I was like, ooh, excellent. So went in and ordered two, but they are currently on, they're on back order for 30 days. So it's going to take me a little longer to get them.
Hey, how would you like to buy one of the ones that I have, or at least do a nice little swap as like a favor? Because one of mine is an investment. One of them is a build, but I could send you one of mine.
I bought, so you have to bought two for the exact same reason. Yeah. One's to build, one's to keep in a box.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'd love to do that. Let's do that. Awesome.
You have another link?
Yes, I do. Other interesting things. Plex has launched live TV service in the Plex media server. So if you're a Plex user at home, which we both are, as semi-cord cutter for me and most and absolute cord cutter for you, Plex is pretty cool. But one of the things that we're lacking was, although you could record TV shows and have them show up in your Plex library, you couldn't watch live TV without some sort of plugins or some sort of add-ons to Plex. But anywho, they are adding live TV support to Plex. So you still need a tuner, obviously, to, you know, get the signals from somewhere. But then it's all baked into the Plex applications and in the media server, and you can stream live TV initially to Android TV and iOS applications, but more Plex apps support coming soon. So that's a big step forward for them. Something I use quite a lot, Plex. So really stoked to see that being added.
Yeah, I updated my, I saw that news come out this morning and I updated my server and restarted everything. And the experience is great. I can only watch it on my phone or on my iPad. But what I found when I was using a custom channel that someone wrote to as a plugin to Plex, it would take anywhere from like 3 to 5 minutes to get enough of the stream buffered from the antenna and then from Plex down to my device where I was watching it, which is generally a Roku. It would take about 3 to 5 minutes to change the live channels, over-the-air channels at least. So yeah, just to clarify, this is over-the-air stuff. You can do things like, you could connect it in via your DirecTV or Comcast box or something like that, but it really is designed for these over-the-air tuners.
Yeah.
I found that changing channels and getting one running was like a 15-second experience or 10-second experience on changing channels. So it's significantly better. It works great. Just can't wait to see it be supported by like the web client and the Roku app as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So it does work well. I've used it.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I haven't tried it out yet, but I just saw that announcement.
My last pick that I'll run here is, this is interesting. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the Google I.O. conference, and we talked a little bit about how they had worked with NVIDIA to create these new special chips just for TensorFlow, and they're called the TPUs, or TPU2s is the second generation of them. So they're TensorFlow processing units. And they showed at the event at Google I.O., they showed one of these racks, one of these big stacks of what their cloud looked like and what it was capable of doing. Now, granted, this is all taken from high-res pictures that Google shared at the day of and everything. But a site called nextplatform.com, back towards the end of May, they did a complete like teardown of what they saw in the pictures and figuring out a bunch of details and everything about the hardware and stuff. And you could see how, if you recall, there were four towers. The two towers in the middle are primarily there for are the TPU towers, and the ones on the outsides were the main CPU towers. So they were there for doing the processing of the data that was coming out of them and not the actual crunching of the numbers and the learning models and stuff, the neural nets. So, but it's a really interesting article. If you like hardware and you're kind of interested in seeing how they do this stuff, pretty darn cool. Pretty darn cool.
Nice. Very cool indeed.
Well, man, this is episode 198. Do you have anything else for us?
No.
Yeah.
Although the America's Cup is on, and I don't know if you know what that is, but it's yachting race and they're in the heats for it at the moment. By the time this show comes out, the heats will be done, I think. But if you're interested in watching things go super fast, watch these yachts. They're amazing. They're catamarans that rise up out of the water on these foils, and they shoot across the water at like 30 and 40 knots on a good wind day. So, and there's a few teams. There's the US in there, Great Britain, Japan, New Zealand, France, Sweden, I think, is in there too. Pretty fun to watch. If you're not into yachting because you think it's boring, these races are not boring. It's kind of like the IndyCar of yacht racing. It's crazy to watch.
Okay, yeah, cool. That's good to hear you say that. I was about to say, you weren't going to just slam IndyCar, were you?
No. It is super exciting. Like, yeah, the lead changes, well, in a lot of the races, the lead changes back and forth all the time. And these things are just, you don't think anything could go that quick powered by the wind. Let's just put it that way.
Is it, I don't know hardly anything about this. Is this the same as like the Oracle I know Oracle's got a team that they sponsor. Is this the same thing? Or is,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the US team is sponsored by Oracle.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So they're doing quite well, and New Zealand is doing pretty well as well. So hopefully they'll go through to the finals and watch it, but it's definitely worth a watch just to see what this thing's all about, because it is crazy. Yep.
Awesome. Well, hey, CJ, thanks.
Awesome, dude.
Thanks a lot for another episode. This was episode 198.
Yeah.
We got two more until we do episode 200. It'll be a fun one. So everyone tune in. I think episode 200 is actually going to be next week. We got a little episode we're going to drop with one of our sponsor features or highlights that we're going to do between this week and next week when this comes out. So if you're listening to this show, hopefully the following Tuesday, you hear episode 200, find out who's going to win a Surface laptop.
Yes.
And two Xbox One bundles.
Can't wait. It's going to be really fun to give that away.
Absolutely. Definitely was. All right, man. Good to see you.
Have a good one.
Enjoy Denver, and I will
catch you next time.
See you soon.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.